Hello again, and welcome back to Building Better Leaders podcast. We've covered a number of subjects that we teach on the Building Better Leaders program over the last few episodes. And I'm really quite excited, Rachel, to be talking about peak performance. It's a subject that gets an awful lot of attention when we deliver this particular module, because it matters to everybody, and it can be different for everybody. And I think it's really useful for leaders to be able to map where they are in their peak performance, and also where their team is, and what are the positives and what are the negatives, and what are the things that they need to look out for in order to get the best amount of productivity and just general happiness within their team when people are at work. So fascinated to hear what you think about it. I've got quite a few questions for you, but I'm going to kick off with a fairly overarching question. Literally, how does a leader make their team perform better once they know how peak performance really works?
Hello, John. Hello, everybody. Great to see you on the podcast, and a great topic for today. So let's get straight into it. How does a leader help their team to perform better? And is peak performance something worthy to strive for in your team? I'm going to cut straight to the answer. Is it worthy? Yes and no, big caveat. But how do we help leaders when they come to us with the question of saying, I want to make my team more effective and more efficient and to work better together? Essentially, they're always asking for peak performance. And peak performance, what is it first up, and then how do we get to it? Peak performance first comes into the field of psychology by Maslow, so creator of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And in 1968, he first introduced this kind of concept, which explains individual experiences and feelings of unity, inner strength, wholeness, where your competence just all comes together. And I think the best definition of the feeling of kind of peak performance, it's very similar to Csikszentmihalyi's concept of flow, where your competence is at such a level that it meets your motivation perfectly and time stands still, and you can just create your best performance ever. And when we're thinking about teams and how they can create a culture that allows peak performance to exist, what we really do with leaders is to help them understand what their performance curve looks like for them. We're not going to focus too much on the performance curve so high, because it's a podcast and it's quite high and hard to explain a visual in that way. But when we're looking at this concept of understanding how peak performance works for you, and the fact that it's not a static state, is really important. And I think what people really like when they come on our program is that we say you can't have peak performance if you also don't have periods of rest and recuperation. And you cannot expect your team to work at that level of peak performance for 37, even 30, even 25 hours a week. There has to be ebbs and flows in energy and motivation. And we always see, don't we, John, people kind of go, oh, on the course, when we explain to them that it's okay sometimes to not be motivated fully. And I think what we forget as leaders, and what leaders that are very busy forget, is that the field of psychology around peak performance is baked in research in the sporting world. And the sporting world's research on peak performance is phenomenal, and peak experiences. And really this definition of peak performance being characterized as, you know, a performance or an event where they've been in the right zone, where they've been in flow, where the feelings, they've got confidence, they've got joy, they've got only positive emotions, and that their body and mind is at absolute optimum thinking. And when you think about that from the field of psychology, and sports psychology, we absolutely want all of those things for people in the workplace. But is that how the workplace operates all the time? No, let's get realistic. It's not. So what we explain and where the field of peak performance and sporting psychology is really useful is you wouldn't ever expect a Premier League football team to train like at the intensity that they play the 90-minute game, or sometimes, extra time, 120-minute game followed by penalties on a Saturday or Sunday. You wouldn't expect them to train Monday to Friday at that level of intensity. It'd be preposterous. If you ran training sessions at that level of intensity, they would burn out. And yet, I think we need to massively smash and dispel this myth that you can expect your team at work to work at a level of peak performance for weeks on end.
But why in business do we not use that analogy and often drive people too hard, or on the alternative, often don't drive people enough? So when I think about that analogy that you're talking about there, Rachel, I'm thinking about where do I and when do I use that maximum level of energy? And do I, in the work that I do, or for the listeners of this podcast, when they're thinking about their roles, where do they use that energy in their particular role? Because this will be different for everybody, right? It'll be different for all sorts of different roles. So I'm thinking about a surgeon in an operating scenario where it's absolutely life and death. And they have got to perform over a long period of time versus somebody who just has to give a presentation for half an hour. But it will be different for different people. And how well, as a leader, am I able to help my team identify when they use their best energy?
Absolutely. So, and I love those two analogies, so we can build on those two examples. So the first thing is to really understand about when do we need the right conditions for peak performance, because you can't have it always on all the time. There's a reason why people break world records in the Olympics. There's a reason why they get the best performance ever in that environment. So I think from a leader, it's really thinking about your wider business plan, your wider strategic plan, and then your deliverables over the course of a quarter or a year, and thinking about when does the work require a peak performance?
And from a leader's point of view, I love that you said that. From a leader's point of view, I'm thinking, and I should be thinking, those are all the inputs.
Absolutely. So, what are the conditions that we need to create that allow peak experiences and peak performances to emerge in our people to deliver the results that we want? So you mentioned, a surgeon might know that they're about to do a innovative groundbreaking surgery, maybe a new hip replacement methodology or something like that. They don't just wake up on a Monday and decide they're going to do that operation on a Friday. This will be months of research, of peer review, of testing it, maybe testing it on mice first, maybe testing it on other smaller operations, doing aspects of it, and it'll culminate in that peak performance. And so I think we need to, as leaders, think about when are the big peaks going to be in our calendar. And people know this stuff. When have you got big web Big, if you work in software, when have you got big new product releases? When have you got new product launches? When, if you work in marketing, when have you got new product campaigns coming out? What are your ebbs and flows, and how do you create the inputs that allow peak performances to come in there? So that's from a leader point of view. I think where peak performance and is peak performance something that you want to strive for? Like I said at the start of this podcast, yes. And no, yes, in the short term, absolutely. You want to be feeling really motivated and you want to be experiencing feelings of peak performance, maybe once a week, maybe once a month. That will be different for everybody. But is peak performance sustainable in teams and organizations? When leaders say we've got a really high performing team, and they're just so supercharged with we're having 200% year-on-year growth every year. I hear things like that and I feel really nervous because peak performance in the long term is not sustainable. It has to ebb and flow. And when I hear about organizations like that, it screams potential burnout to me. And we get a lot of entrepreneurs that you'll work you'll you, they've almost slept at work for 3 years and then they have to go on a sabbatical for a year. So
How
I
would,
think
as a leader, am I seeing that I can keep people to a point, and then I have to say, right, enough is enough?
yeah, and well, two things on that. Yes, leaders need to be aware of this, and they have a responsibility to their team to watch for this. But also, whether you're a leader or not, you have massive personal responsibility for managing and understanding your own energy flows and your own performance. So I think there's two things at play here because I know, and you'll know the same. We see a lot of leaders on the Building Better Leaders programs that are great at spotting this in other people, and they're great at telling their team when to start and when to stop and when to push harder. And they are absolutely terrible at not overworking themselves. And so I think whether you're a leader or not, not irrelevant to this point, I think we all have a personal responsibility if we want to do our best in work to understand the relationship between our energy expenditure, our arousal and motivation, and our performance.
So explicitly, what would you call that zone before you get to peak performance?
Yeah, so anybody that's in the world of work that's curious about increasing their performance and wants to be in peak performance more often, you need to understand and raise your awareness about your relationship between your arousal, which is stress and motivation, and your performance. And so when we have low levels of stress or arousal and low levels of performance, we call that in the short term the recuperation zone. So it's a really healthy place to be in is the recuperation zone. So for that surgeon example that you're mentioned before, John, that might be doing the research. It might be quite restorative work, looking at peer review and papers, reading journals about innovations in new technology and new surgical methods. For somebody that's wanting to do the best presentation, to win a big pitch, for a new work in an advertising company, might be watching like TED Talks or might go and view some talks by other people. So they're not expending much energy themselves, but it's a learning opportunity and it's very restorative. We then move up into a performance zone. So not a perfor not peak performance, but a performance zone where your energy expenditure and motivation is high. You're on it, you're feeling it, and your performance is high. And that is the performance zone. And to answer your first question, most of us should be spending in work most of our time in the performance zone, or half of our time in the performance zone, maybe 60, 70%. That's when, we're pushing ourselves, yeah, we're motivated, but you're not killing yourself. It's not the Olympics to give it that peak performance, that sporting one. You're training at a certain level of intensity. There's some structure to your work, but you're pushing yourself, you're building new competence, you're learning. But there's also some rhythms to your day. There's also a bit of routine and ritual. There's maybe dives back down into restorative work, right? So the bulk of work should be done in the performance zone. And then the peak performance zone, which is what we're talking about, these conditions for optimal performance, which is the leader's view to spot when that's required. So when we're on a deadline is the most common one for most of us. In that, doing that pitch, that presentation, that is your peak performance. You know, that morning you're going to be like sweating, you're going to be nervous, you've maybe not slept that well, and actually you're not physiologically that well prepped the day before a really nerve-wracking presentation. Your sleep's obviously usually disturbed, you can't eat, but because you've been in that performance zone for the weeks before, where you've been learning, you've been pushing your competence, you've been testing things, you're able to go into a period of peak performance for a very short period of time to perform at a level that you've never performed at before. And I think it's understanding when that's required, but people mistake or confuse that peak performance is not when the work's quashing you and there's so much to do that you just need to work till 8 o'clock every night. You know, that's not peak performance. That's performing over a long period of time at a level that actually will deplete in the long term. So when we look at that performance zone, if you're held there too long without moving into a very, very short-term peak performance or having some rest and restorative or low energy work, our performance will deplete over time because we get burnt out. And really, that peak performance, it's different for everyone to answer your question. You know, I think I talk to you quite a lot about I can do a lot of my best work at like 5 a.m. on a Thursday. I don't know why it's a Thursday. For some reason, I have these moments where if I've got, and we'll talk about this on another podcast, when I need to eat a frog, when I've got a really big piece of work or a new proposal or something that needs to be done that I know I'm going to feel amazing about once I've done it, but it's pushing me to the edge of my competence and it requires a micro peak performance. I do it on a Thursday morning before anybody's got up. But that's me understanding how that curve plays out for me. You might only want a peak performance for your team once a month, but it needs to last a good few days. You might want peak performances for your team every month on, if you're in HR or you do payroll, those 2 days before payroll are very, very intense. For a sales team, it might culminate after a 3 month of trying to nurture a new prospect, and then you've got a week of peak performance. The responsibility is on you to understand what the work requires and when you do, what the conditions are to do your best work.
I absolutely know that you can do a lot of your good work early on a morning. I know that that's how you set up your week, your working week. But I do also know that you have a specific day, usually Fridays, where you recuperate. That's how your performance is held to a point where you're really quite productive. My peak performance, I almost need to choose at the time when my peak performance is. So if I'm particularly, if I'm doing work outside of a workshop, that might be at some point in the week, but I'll know when it is at the time, rather than like a preordained idea of knowing that I do this on a Thursday and I do it on a Thursday morning. So I think for anybody listening to this, there's no sort of right or wrong. It's literally down to the individual, but being aware of it is the most important facet, if you like. We
Absolutely. And I think the other thing on that, and I love that you mentioned that you almost have to choose yours. And I think if you've listened to the previous podcast, John's a rebel tendency type. And that's really quite common that rebels will naturally just fall into a peak performance zone when it feels right for them. But also on the Myers-Briggs, you're a P. So that means you don't like to plan, you like spontaneity in your work.
Yes.
So
Yeah.
that would feel natural for you. I'm an upholder, so I get more motivation from knowing the routine and the ritual
It's
of the
planning,
type
yes.
of work that I'm doing. But I think the core thing for this in understanding how peak performance works in organisations is, yes, you absolutely want peak performance in the short term, but you do not get peak performance without having downtime. And that downtime is that low level stress work, where the performance is lower as well. And you need to work out what that flow is. So, an example will be A brilliant example of this for me is Tuesday this week. We went to Skipton to deliver a workshop. It was a really, really early start and it was a really late finish. And it was a day of delivering material all day. And then we went out with a client that evening. And I had some work scheduled in for the Wednesday that actually does require a peak performance. So it requires a high performance. It's a tender submission. And I just couldn't, I didn't have it in me. And if I, on the Wednesday, I actually just made the decision that morning. I started to do the work. It was on a deadline. I started to try and do it. And I was like, I'm not getting anywhere with this. The conditions aren't right. I'm not rested enough. My stress levels aren't right for this. And so I just pushed out the deadline. Now you can't always do that, but if I would have continued and forced myself to have done that, with me having a small child and obviously lots of other family responsibilities, I would have been feeling quite very stressed or burnt out now. And so I think you've got to take that responsibility of managing it yourself and just knowing when something's going to push you into getting sick.
Yes, I think that's an important point that you make, and good for our listeners to think about in their lives and how they operate in their role, is that if you'd have tried to continue to do that work on that Wednesday morning, the harder you tried, probably the worse that would have become and more stressful for you, more tiring. And then we're talking about the results of that. So headaches, not being able to sleep easily, all the sort of things that we suffer from when actually we just keep trying and it becomes even more difficult.
Absolutely. And so sometimes when you're on a very strict deadline, you might have no option but to carry on. In I had some fat in the timings on this. But I just want to pick up on what you said. It's really important that we understand the opportunity cost of expending that energy at that time because there is a very, very fine line between peak performance. And unfortunately, we see this in the field of sport as well, where sometimes there's too much pressure and the conditions are too much that we in on the edge of peak performance and burnout, which is a really clear drop-off point. Stress can become too high where we go into de-stress and our fight, flight, or freeze gets fired. And we see this, don't we, in World Cups where people miss penalties. They've trained their whole lives to take these penalties. They know what to do. In businesses, it's awful when somebody comes for a job interview or they do a big presentation. You know, they've put the heart and soul into it and they just freeze or they fluff the lines on stage. And that comes from not putting enough recuperation in after that peak performance or during that high performance to enable you to go on a little bit longer. And I know in that instance of my case, I could have pushed myself forward. But what I would have done is rob time from the weekend where I would have probably had to spend the day in bed from exhaustion, or I would have, my baby's quite sick, I would have picked up a cold. And I think you've always got to weigh up this opportunity cost. And I think organisations and leaders, you've just got to be careful when you're asking for more and more and more of your people. You are pushing that energy expenditure down the line. And when it pops, it literally falls to the floor. And this is when we get burnout and people going off on long-term sick, where people have been held in periods of really tight deadlines, or when you've not recruited for two extra people in your team and you've got three people carrying the weight of five. And then we find it annoying when somebody's gone on long-term sick and then there's only two left in the team. And that can come from not allowing people to do work that's restorative. So, did I not work on Wednesday? No, I still worked, but I cleared out my inbox. I did some remedial work. I did some invo I did some low effort, low energy work, and I did finish bang on time. You know, I did finish half an hour earlier. There's no point in sitting there if you're going to have to work harder and get less done. It's not effective. So, I think the thing for people to think about is, how does your energy ebb and flow in a week or a month or a year? How does the performance curve play out for you? And when I mean performance curve, I mean When do you naturally feel like you need to do restorative work? When do you feel like you're in a zone of performance? What work do you need to do that requires performance? What are the conditions that the organization requires for you from a peak performance? And there shouldn't be heaps of those. Think of it as your Saturday football match. When do those peak performances, when do you need to show up? It might be in a team meeting where you're totally present and you're an introvert and that's not a natural state of mind to you. It might be in a one-to-one. It might be in a presentation. It might be in a pitch. But you can't expect to perform like that at all times. We're certainly not saying, oh gosh, you should only be working 25 hours a week and the rest should be low level.
In a way of sort of summarizing this, then, from a leader's point of view, if I'm looking at this for my organization or even just for my team, I'm thinking that if I want the best performance from me and my team, but I also want their well-being also to be catered for, I have to think about when people use their energy in that role, and how much I can stretch them until I have to say that's enough in order to maintain our well-being and our performance over a long period of time. I need you to recuperate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the other thing, you talked about inputs a lot before. I think we haven't also talked about the other factors at play, but we've covered them for peak performance and having effective organizations is thinking about the other factors at play, which are the skill level and the competence of your people. So where they are on those four leadership quadrants, how competent are they at that skill? Because that will impact how long they can be in the performance zone or peak performance zone and what it looks like for them. We touched on this with personality. Personality type has a massive play in how the performance curve works for you and peak performance. People that are more obligers or upholders might prefer more routine. People that are rebels or P's versus J's on the Myers-Briggs might like spontaneity and peak performance to occur at any time. We've also got to look at the confidence people have got in themselves. And I think confidence and self-awareness are so well linked. Like the more curious you have about how this stuff works for you, the more confident you get in saying yes, saying no, and also your confidence in your belief that you can do something because that's motivating, which allows you to ride a performance curve for longer.
I was thinking exactly the same when you were talking about somebody taking a penalty in a World Cup, or fluffing lines on stage. Is this peak performance and being aware of where we are and when we operate at our best is one side of it. I also think like confidence is such a huge element of performance, like you say, because if you want something so badly, you can often end up not wanting to make the mistake. So in the penalty
Absolutely.
point of view, you don't want to miss because of the ramifications of that, and how do you live with that, and how much sort of grief are you going to get from supporters and fellow players and coaches and managers, and
And that's exactly the same, though, in the workplace, because it's how much if you fluff up in work, are you going to be worried that people are going to criticize you versus have you got the confidence to say mistakes happen and I did my best?
I think when we talk about this in coaching, often the way to perhaps deal with that is try to ask people when they're thinking about how they're doing in the middle of a task rather than what they're actually doing. Because once you start trying to score yourself, how well am I doing? You
A
move
great
away
question.
from the very thing that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, that's a great question. And the final one, and just the factors before we wrap this up, is also then the task complexity itself and the conditions of the organisation. So, if you've got a really healthy culture of safe to fail experiments and people feel safe in the workplace, peak performance and the performance zone can be somewhere where people can stay for longer. If you've got really complex tasks in a critical organization, probably less so. So I think that also comes into play for individuals. But I think the big thing with peak performance and managing your own performance is to understand that energy flows and how you respond to stress is different for everybody, but you need some downtime, you need some peak performance, you need some stress, but you need to change it up over a time frame that's unique for you to make it work to get a truly effective team.
As usual, we will leave you with our three leadership essentials. So, Rachel, number one.
Leadership essential number one is it's imperative that if you are leading a team and you want to lead yourself better, that you recognize your arousal and stress levels and your performance and how they are interrelated. Get curious about how your energy needs to be managed and when you are, what are the conditions you need personally for peak performance, and take personal responsibility for that. Leadership essential number two would be really think about the factors that are at play in your organisation and in your role for what requires good performance, peak performance, and restoration, and how do they all to connect interconnect. So what's the skill level you need? What do you need to get better at? Do you actually need to get better at resting and recuperation? Do you need to get better at recognizing what the triggers are in your body for burnout? Do you have to get better at recognizing that it's quite addictive to feel that adrenaline from peak performance, but it's not sustainable? So really think about how that skill level, your personality, your confidence, and the task complexity all intertwine for you. And the third leadership essential would be, is peak performance something that you should be striving for your team in the workplace? And the answer is it depends. Yes, you do in the short term. No, you don't in the long term because the cost is too great. And ask any Olympic athlete who's ever been burnt out and they will tell you why. That is not something you want to be chasing. So that's peak performance for today. Hope you found this useful. If you are interested and curious and really inspired by this notion of what peak performance is and how it looks in your role and organization, we have a module in our Building Better Leaders program on the performance curve and on how to stress smart to make your teams better motivated. And this is where we take everybody through with a coaching approach on how to really understand their personal performance curve. So if that's something of interest, please get in touch with us at leaders@scaffoldcoaching.com. But if not, we'll see you next week.
See you again.
Thank you so much for listening to the Building Better Leaders podcast. We hope you've got a lot out of this. If you'd like to read up a bit more on any of the content that you've heard in today's podcast, be sure to check out our website, scaffoldcoaching.com.